For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics, along with Republican political consultant Neva Hill and ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel. Well, Governor Fallon kicks off the 2018 legislative session with her eighth and final State of the State address. The address mostly focused on pushing the Step Up Oklahoma plan from business and civic leaders. Neva, what did you think of the speech?
Well, no surprises. And I think bottom line is you're exactly right. It was all about Step Up Oklahoma, the plan. And, you know, the governor saying the state is at a crossroads, that's an understatement. And really trying to set the stage for the legislature to decide what they're going to do. So I don't think she threw out anything surprising. It was really kind of the almost anticlimactic in some regards, I think, for her career and being her final state of the state. But I think it is really reflective of just the climate inside that Capitol building right now, and the fact that I don't think she's in a place to exert any real leadership to change the rhetoric or change the formula of what's going to go down here in the next few weeks, probably.
Ryan.
You know, I got to think that if she could get in the hot tub time machine and go back 8 years and think of what the State of the State address that she would like to give, culminating her time in the governor's mansion, this would not be it. Right. And I think that it was anticlimactic. It was not the kind of capstone speech of a chief executive officer of the state of Oklahoma. I haven't done it yet, but I'm planning to go back. I'm going to try to see if I can find Brad Henry's. I don't know if I can make it all the way through it. His were a lot longer than what we heard earlier this week.
This one was very short.
It was incredibly short.
Right, very short, for her.
Yeah, it was an incredibly short speech. It was very short on substance. It was very short on time, but it was very short on substance. Not a lot of particulars in there. And I think that, like Neva said, it reflected the attitude in that building that everybody knows where all the issues are at right now. All the lines have been drawn in the sand. You're in the middle of a second special session as the regular session is kicking off. It was the Step Up promotion package. I think that, you know, one of the things that I heard in the speech, and I don't know this, but what it sounded like in some instances that there were several speeches that were written that were kind of mashed together, and because you could hear some weird transitions in there. And so how much of it was written with Step Up in mind and then trying to work in a broader theme about the state of Oklahoma and where it stands right now. Again, I think that if Mary Fallon had her druthers, she would have been in a position to give a different speech. But, you know, frankly, we are where we are, and it's hard to not do anything else other than stand up and say, we got to do something.
Well, and they couldn't really say it, though. You're right. We couldn't say much. But then maybe as a speechwriter, you go more for ask not what your country can do for you, more of something like that rather than.
But I think you had folks in the chamber that were not interested in hearing that type of either soaring rhetoric or a visionary speech of kind of casting forward and looking for the brighter tomorrow. I think everyone kind of had the heavy cloud over, you know, kind of over the entire chamber, and I think it really did reflect. I mean, it put the governor, frankly, in a very very difficult spot. I mean, just to kind of get through it almost. I mean, I think is what you could characterize the speech is, I have to give it. This is where we are. This is the plan. I'm doubling down on it to the degree that I can as the governor in support of it. But now there's a whole lot of other folks here in this building that are really going to dictate the outcome.
Well, she did get through it. Of course, there was the protest that happened, which I thought was at least polite enough to wait till she was done.
Yeah. You know, they didn't have to wait long.
The speech didn't take
very long. I think that, you know, and if you look, and I think that also reflects the attitude in the state right now, is that there's a lot of frustration in the state. Folks are looking at the Capitol and seeing folks not coming up with solutions. And when we talk about the governor's speech, you know, soaring rhetoric, that's really not the governor's strong suit. Mm-hmm. I mean, she does some things well, but, you know, she's not known as a moving orator. I mean, that's not whenever you look at her, everything that she's done in her political career that's got her to where she is today, that's just not one of the things that's done it. And so it was a short speech. You had a lot of tropes, you know, no more kicking the can down the road and stuff like that. But I think that, you know, she is in a position where she didn't want to be seen as lecturing to the legislature. She needs them to come along with her if they're going to get a plan passed for the special session and then move forward with the budget for this regular session as well.
And I think those protests really were, again, almost anticlimactic, to use the word again, in that everyone knows the climate. Everyone knows the public's frustrated. The folks that are the elected folks are frustrated. No one can get a plan that seems to get any traction for anything more than a few minutes in time. And so I think that really was kind of that, just kind of almost add on. Okay, now let's move on. Yeah. And it didn't get the attention that, and I'm glad it didn't get any more attention than it did, because it really was it was unwarranted to have gone beyond just acknowledging that it happened.
And that's just where we are, the political moment in 2018. If something like that had happened in 2014 or 2008, that would have been
the headline.
Huge.
That would have been the headline.
But now it's just normal course of business. You know, things are awful, and somebody's pointing out that it's awful, and okay, next day.
The bills compromising the Step Up Oklahoma plan are getting heard in the State House and Senate. Even as we're recording this, in the House and Senate Joint Committees on Appropriations and Budget, also known as JCAB. Ryan, do you think these bills will get enough support from Democrats to help reach the 75% threshold for tax increases?
Boy, who knows? And by the time folks are listening to this, there may be an answer to some of those questions.
Well,
at least.
We know they'll get out of JCAB probably, because they only need a 50% plus one.
And,
but
to get, and maybe we'll have a sense of what kind of support they get out of JCAB.
Right.
You know, that'll give us an idea of what kind of support, what kind of reception they'll get on the floor. You know, there are a lot of... I think that there's this sense, and we saw it in the State of the State address, where Step Up is being positioned as being postured as this one package, this one omnibus piece of bill, but it's really not. I mean, we're talking 18 plus pieces of legislation that may be necessary to get this thing ultimately passed, with all of the different provisions out there.
Appropriations bills, etc.
And there are a ton of moving pieces behind the scenes right now. You know, some of those moving pieces have accomplished one of the chief objectives of the Step Up plan, and that was to take the ballot initiative that would have raised the gross production tax up to 7% to take it off the table. It's not completely off the table right now, but we've seen some of those small independent producers that were behind that state question say that they're now satisfied with enough provisions in the Step Up plan that if it moves along accordingly, they'll back off that. And so, you know, I think that, you know, Step Up was a way to head off that state question and what that might look like for the oil and gas community in the state of Oklahoma. And, you know, so whether we get there or not, I don't know. I think that if you look at some of the rhetoric coming out of not only the Democrats, but out of the Republican caucus, saying that they do not want tax increases, that they do not want billionaires dictating policy to the people of Oklahoma through an omnibus revenue package, and then to see the speaker say, this is it. You know, this is the package. We're either going to do it or we don't. That's, to me, there are a lot of unanswered questions right now.
Yeah, Neva, what do you think about the Republican? We even had one press release yesterday from Representative Hardin, I think it was, who said he wouldn't vote for it.
And I think that came as a result of some folks had him down as a maybe or a question mark. And I think the story around the Capitol is that he just said, let me make this clear, and put the release out to say, in fact, that he was a no. I think there's so many, Ryan's right, there are a lot of moving parts. And unfortunately, it would appear right now, as we come to the end of this week, that it doesn't appear to be going well. I mean, getting them out of JCAB is, I think, a given. Having a vote early next week, I think at least the initial vote to see where we are could be as early as Monday is what I hear. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the fact that the reforms seem to be falling apart, many of those measures now, you know, being pulled off, including, you know, adding 4 years to the term limits and a number of other elements, mm-hmm. The problems with the tax revenue piece of the package, and the fact that they pulled that back because there are all kinds of issues with the language and the fact that it really seems to be riddled with problems, and that's kind of gone off the skid. So you've got all of these pieces, and every special interest that has a dog in the fight has doubled down inside the building, you know, on these folks, and seem to be intractable. So, you know, while some say, oh, yes, the votes are there, and others say it's, you know, DOA, it's somewhere in between, but it's still a pretty difficult picture, I think, to say that that they're going to be able to get this thing resolved in short order, which was, of course, I think, what everybody had hoped for going into the session.
We're at the proverbial rubber hitting the road.
That's right. That's right.
You know,
that's right.
The media rollout of that, I don't want to say it's the easy part, because it's difficult, and the folks that did that media rollout did a magnificent job, but now we're here. year and folks are negotiating. And Neva's right. If you want a lesson in pure power politics right now, you go to the Capitol and you try to get be a fly on the wall on some of these backroom deals that are happening right now. Everybody from public employees to teachers to the oil and gas industry to the wind industry, and I'm sure we'll talk about that in a moment.
The chambers, etc.
The chambers. Yeah. Everybody is trying to get their voice mm-hmm. heard out there. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of all of that, you've got some facts about the plan. Neva's right. The income tax revenue portion of this, there are some questions as to whether the revenue projections are actually where they think they're going to be. There's some questions about who's going to benefit and who's going to lose out of those income tax projections. And I think that that's partly the result of the income tax provision of this being wildly overly complicated where it didn't need to be.
Right. In the midst of that, you also have these lawmakers who have not been they've been in that building for 12 years. Well, maybe 10, because of course
some of them it feels a lot longer than 12 years right now.
But still, it's like they don't have the experience. If you had the experience back, before term limits, when you had statesmen who'd been there for 30, 40 years, and when these business leaders could come in and say, "This is what you're going to do," they'd say, they knew how to handle it.
Right.
But these younger lawmakers don't know how to deal with this.
They're building the plane while they fly.
And I don't know that there's really any pattern to quote the pressure. I mean, these folks ultimately are going to do, I think, what they think is right, and it's going to be all over the board.
Yeah.
It's not really going to be dictated. I think, if they're trying to make a safe vote that somehow is going to make it easier for filing and re-election, they're kidding themselves on either side of the ledger. I mean, we're now in a climate where there's winners and losers. I mean, people are going to be unhappy with the result, and they are going to, take probably the next step, and that is try to be very aggressive in trying to communicate that message for or against during the election cycle. So I think that adds to the confusion right now, unfortunately, to the mix out there, and they really need to just deal with business and let I tell folks all the time, I mean, at some point you have to take care of business and then you go take care of the election and hope that hope that the result is what you want, but you can't really mire both of them down so much that you don't get anything done, and that's where we are right now, getting nothing done.
Yeah, another voice, of course, is the Oklahoma people. A new survey from Sooner Poll shows widespread support for Oklahoma likely voters, while Democrats and independents support the plan. More than 70% Republicans support the plan by more than 66%. Neva, does a poll like this influence lawmakers as they head into possible votes?
I don't know that it really does. I think the hope and expectation, by the proponents of the plan is that it would. But, they're hearing, as in the districts, they're hearing from folks on all sides of this question. It's not just a one-dimensional fight. I mean, you are hearing from folks that bring their particular interest to the mix, and those are all such moving parts that I think at the end of the day they really are just going to have to make their own decision. It's not going to be does my district tilt heavily one way or the other. I mean you hear even in the special election coming up in Western Oklahoma in the Murdoch seat. I mean, you look at some of the poll numbers and you look in some of what's being said about, where the split is in that race. I mean, that'll be kind of a bellwether, I think, to see whether or not the trend is going to really impact an election. This special election may be a real good focal point for people to watch to see whether a Democrat who hasn't held that seat since, I think, Don Williams, many years ago, has a shot to pull an upset, because we saw some of those in the special elections last year. So, but there's just it's a weird climate out there, and I think we're going to have to really, really look. But the bottom line to me in the poll is when you look at the Republicans and what they are saying, here's where the rub is. I mean, the Republicans are getting pushed on, are you going to hold the line on new taxes on the revenue side? And of the hard, likely voting conservative Republicans in many of these districts, they're intractable on that question. Mm. They, yes, they know there's a problem, but no, this is not a solution they're willing to accept from their lawmaker. So I think it's a very difficult, place for a lot of these folks to be.
Right.
I think the only real conclusion that we can draw from this poll that came out is that Oklahoma, and that's something that I think that we've known now for at least a year, if not two or three years, is that Oklahomans are willing to accept some revenue increases to adequately fund state services. That's what I saw from this poll. Now, drilling down and trying to understand how that fits into the Step Up Oklahoma plan, I don't think you can draw a lot of conclusions there. They had one question in this poll, and it was presented as this huge omnibus question of, you know, everything, all the ornaments and lights on the Christmas tree, and it was conditioned on all of these reforms going through. And they left out, you know, the wind energy stuff, the new wind energy taxes, and the elimination of the credits there. So, you know, looking at all of that, it's like, well, in this very unique situation in a vacuum, then, well, yeah, you probably can get, you know, 60% plus support. I think that if you start to break down the individual components of this, the way it's broken down in the legislature and the way they're voting on these individual bills, I think that those numbers look a lot different. And especially whenever you start to drill into the income tax portion of this, that's really complicated, that could have, you know, some, you know, that creates these, and then the elimination of the earned income tax credit refund from last year, they're trying to replace that with a tax credit for low-income families in Oklahoma this year that's deeply flawed. The Oklahoma Policy Institute has a wonderful piece on that, how this new tax credit creates these income cliffs that actually create disincentives for people to earn a certain amount of money. Yeah. And it would cost basically the same as what it would cost to reinstate the earned income tax credit.
You know, the interesting thing about this plan, if you had, even among Republicans, a strong majority, almost everyone say, this is a plan. We don't love a whole lot of things about this plan, but it's a plan. It moves the state forward. It gets us out of the fix that we're in. We can start looking forward and take the strong, united, let's all go shoulder to shoulder on this and move forward and get a few Democrats in all likelihood that would come across and join those forces. That would be one scenario that would be workable and I think would match what you're saying about what the public is saying in that poll to me. Bottom line is, look, it's broken. Fix it. We're tired of hearing about it. You know, we want to stop being mad every time we pick up the paper or hear a radio story or, you know, watch the TV. And all it is this doom and gloom. These folks can't get anything done. So I think if they could change that scenario, the folks would kind of forget the details a little bit. I mean, they would pick and choose what they like and don't like, just like they do at the national level. But to not have a plan that can move forward at all in any direction, I think is really what is absolutely going to be difficult for all of these folks to explain down the road when they get into the election season.
Right. It's usually an inside baseball type of thing is what we're talking about. But it looks like, and that's the
it's
other
a
thing,
perception it, problem
but it's
right
also
now.
They're paying attention. And
they're paying attention to the overall
elected official. You don't necessarily want your voter to kind of be paying attention.
They're paying attention to the fact nothing's going on.
Right, I mean, that's
you
what
know,
I'm saying. Yeah, right.
You know, unless you're, you know, if you're oil and gas, or if you're in the, you know, the wind sector, or you're in the healthcare sector, or whatever your sector is that you know the implications and ramifications of something happening or not happening. Yeah, I mean, you're looking at that piece, but I think general voters are looking at the total picture, and they don't like the fact that we're not seeing anything done.
And Step Up's being presented as this compromise plan. And to some extent, it is a compromise plan. But what we're seeing right now with the time frames that are being rolled out for it, it's rather than compromise politics, it's ultimatum politics.
Well, yep.
It's this or nothing. Yeah. And I think that, you know, there are some worthwhile pieces to the Step Up plan that need to be considered, that need to be voted on. But they also, you know, all of the folks, you know, thanks to everybody that sat down at the table and wrote this for us. But you know what? You're not perfect. There are some things that need to be changed here, in particular with the income tax portion of this. You know, we're at a point where we haven't been in a very long time where we're beginning to see both the public say we're ready for some new revenues, but the legislature saying we're ready to consider some new income tax increases. Let's get it right. Let's not just haphazard throw something together and say, well, a bunch of billionaires said that this was okay. Let's pass it. That portion, I think, deserves a little bit more attention. And I think that if we can get that, then you'll get buy-in from Democrats and you'll get enough Republicans and we can maybe pass something.
Wind power leaders hold a press conference to raise concerns about Step Up Oklahoma, especially worried about how the tax increases and tax credit caps could negatively impact the industry. This normally wouldn't be a big deal, except near the end, everyone was kicked out of the House lounge by the sergeant at arms. Ryan, should there be concern about an attempt to silence this group?
You know, I whether they were silenced or not, I don't. I mean, it's what we have a bunch of dueling press releases right now from folks saying, well, I reserved it and they were supposed to be there, or no, they didn't reserve it the right way. I think that, you know, the bigger question here is how we can begin as a state to have a conversation about, you know, how are we investing in wind energy? You know, the tax credits that we have in place right now for wind energy, you know, the amount that they cost the state versus, you know, what we're getting in return. They were a fledgling industry whenever these credits went into place. They're certainly not that today. I think it's most likely that we're going to see something this session, whether it's the elimination of some credits, you know, and some sort of a tax increase. You know, we've got the 2020 expiration date for these credits. You know, that may be pushed back to this year. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of things that I think need to be considered here. But David Blatt and the Oklahoma Policy Institute, you know, they wrote a great piece about how it's important for us to not confuse the amount that we're spending on wind energy tax credits with the amount of money that's going out the door and the tax credits that go to the oil and gas industry. You know, we're talking on one hand maybe $100 million that we're spending on wind energy, which, you know, may or may not need to be brought down or eliminated altogether. That's a conversation that should happen. But I think that the oil and gas industry wants to use the wind energy as a red herring to say, well, look at all these credits that these guys are getting. Well, at the same time, they've got $500 to $600 million in tax credits that are lost revenue to the state of Oklahoma right now for their continued efforts to keep the 7% gross production tax down either at 2 or 4%. And so, you know, if we're going to have these conversations about energy credits, it needs to be all energy credits. It shouldn't be the oil and gas industry using their considerable lobbying power to scapegoat the wind energy.
Neva.
Well, I think what we see is considerable lobbying power by both of these groups. I mean, to say that wind hasn't been very forceful and very methodical in how they've approached, you know, getting their issue out front, just like we see right now. I mean, a very stepped up lobbying effort that's gone on the air. Waves that's taken their message with the best selling points that they're trying to cobble together to make. But in my mind, back to the plan and back to the overarching issues overall, we have a situation where it's not about either or. All of these folks needed to be at the table. All of them need to take be in the mix of having to take somewhat of a hit, if you want to call it that. There's got to be the shared pain in this process. And I think when you get these competing, super entities out there that just decide that it's going to be the either-or proposition, the only folks that lose in that scenario are the voters and the people of Oklahoma. So, I think that the kind of the backdrop with this, mini drama with whether or not they should have been able to use the House Lounge for a news conference is really all it did was help them get additional headlines. And it may have been an orchestrated effort to do just that. Who knows? But the bottom line is, bring all of these folks to the table, not make it an either-or proposition, and then I think the public can, at least begin to sort out, really the legitimate arguments on both sides, which right now kind of gets lost in the fog on all points.
The State House passes its first bill of 2018, and it's actually a holdover corrections reform bill from last year. House Bill 2281, which reduces property crimes like larceny and forgery, passed by a vote of 67-17 and now heads to the Senate. Neva, what are your thoughts on this measure?
I think it's reflective of the fact that we have a change in leadership with Representative Biggs gone. Kind of it's a new day. I think there was a concerted effort to kind of move this up and demonstrate that there's a clear interest in the legislature, I think, to move these reform measures forward. So this was quick action, on something that had been carried over. We'll see we'll see what happens. But this is one area where the governor has been very forceful, very articulate in trying to kind of ramp up the discussion and the debate on this. And I think as bills like this, if they pass and get to her desk, I think she can claim legitimate credit for being part of making it happen.
Ryan, do you guys support this bill?
Absolutely. ACLU supports this bill.
I thought I saw a press release from you guys.
Yeah, well, if you watch the State of the State address, there was one moment where you had a standing ovation where everybody was just, we're in this deal. We're going to fix this. And it was around the governor's remarks on criminal justice reform. And, so standing ovations are great, but you've got to have some action to back it up. And so we see this bill move through committee, and I'm cautiously optimistic that this is a signal that we have a new day here. Now, there was another criminal justice reform bill that came up that same day that failed. The very next day, a House committee passed a bill that would make all thefts of guns, regardless of how old, cheap, or janky your gun is, all gun thefts a felony. You know, I think the committee missed an opportunity to pander a little bit more. They could have thrown Bibles in there too, and they could have got gun owners and evangelicals in one sweeping bill. But they missed it. You know, it's early in session. They'll step up their game eventually. But yeah, you know, I think that one of the things we have to watch for here is that we don't see Speaker McCaul and others take these bills, move them through committee, put them in conference, and then act like they've done something, or put them in conference and then water them down. The District Attorney's Council, other groups, law enforcement, they're still very adamantly against these pieces of legislation. And they are opponents of State Question 780, the sweeping reforms that were passed by the people overwhelmingly in 2016. They're working very diligently behind the scenes to water these bills down to make sure that if they do pass and get to the governor's desk, that they don't look like what they look like today. And so legislative leaders, and I think, you know, Speaker McCaul is to be commended for where we are right now, but what we really need to see from him and what we need to see from the Senate and from the governor is a statement that says, these are the bills, these are the ideas that we want to see embodied in law, and we're going to be very clear that our power and leadership are behind those, and any efforts to water them down will be met with swift and strong resistance.
There you go. Ryan Neva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.